Hey AIM members, have you heard? Early bird registration for AIM Fuse 2020 has been extended. Lock in the discounted ticket price of $125 for next year's Fuse conference. Head over to aimgroup.com/fuse to grab your early bird spot before they're all sold out. Hey broker to broker fans, this week AIM chairman Anthony Casa takes over to sit down with Isabel Williams, broker owner of We Save Loans, to discuss her journey into the mortgage industry after years of serving in the U.S. Army. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this special edition episode.
Hello, this is Anthony Casa, chairman of AIM, and we're here for another episode of the AIM podcast. We just wanted to introduce Isabel Williams, who's with us today. Isabel is the owner of We Save Loans in Florida. She is a single entrepreneur, business operator who made the decision to start her own brokerage in May of 2019. And we're really excited to learn about her story, learn about the transition, and learn a lot about, you know, how she's building her business today. So how are you, Isabel?
Good. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. And thank you for coming. We appreciate you coming all the way from Florida, too. So let's get started. Tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get started in the industry? What was your career journey?
I actually was a realtor, and I was amazed at how much information was online in regards to like loans and stuff. So I became a top producer, did the whole nine yards, and I went through some personal things in my personal life, and I just needed some stability. I still loved real estate, but I needed a little bit more control over my hours and my weekends and all of that stuff. So I had a friend that was a lender at the time, and they were like, do what I do. You know, you'd be great at it. Okay. So I ended up getting licensed again about 4 years ago and transitioned back into mortgages. And I started out with a small brokerage. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is a little disorganized. This isn't really going to work for me. And I tried it with another company. And I just kind of found that, you know, at that time, this is like back in 2014, I think everybody was still kind of recovering from everything that happened with the market. I felt like I needed systems. And I just kind of think that came from actually being ex-military. Like, we're so, you know, we have standard operating procedures, like, do this like this. Okay. And then there you go. And I kind of found that it was kind of hard coming from that level of organization, going like just into sales period. You know, it's the wild, wild west. Yeah. You can do whatever you want. It's
like complete structure to fully unstructured.
So that was a little interesting. That definitely was a little like, wow. What am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah, exactly.
So a little lost.
I did not know. This is really interesting. First of all, I did not know that you started as a realtor, but I did not know you were in the military. What branch of the military were you in?
Army.
Okay. Wow. That is really, really good to know. So how many years were you in the military?
A total of eight years.
Wow. Yeah. That is really impressive. That's good to know. It's good for us to know, especially.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, thank you for your service.
You're welcome. I did it for selfish reasons, FYI.
Well, you served for sure. So learning, you know, kind of going through that whole process, you know, real estate agent, you get into the mortgage industry. Yeah. Now, fast forwarding a little bit, when you start thinking about becoming a mortgage broker's owner. So like, you know, being a salesperson is one big jump because you are, you know, all salespeople are technically self-employed. I mean, like at the end of the day, you are, you know, earning your commissions and going out and building relationships. Being a business owner is a whole nother layer of responsibility now because it's all on you. What kickstarted just the actual thought of, hey, I might want to go start my own company?
I wasn't getting what I wanted. It really came down to that. You know, like I wanted to have like a consistent experience for my clients across the board every single time. And even though I was in a structured organization, it was painful, especially the busier I got, the more business that was coming in. My realtors were like, hey, this one didn't go so great. And luckily we have good relationships, so they would bitch and complain and not leave me. But it was still very scary because if I would go generate a new relationship there was always kind of that fear of that inconsistent experience. So, of course, I thought I could do it better. So that was literally what triggered the shut up.
Yep.
If you're not going to do something about it, if you're going to keep bitching and complaining, just be quiet or do something. So that was really it. It was more the fact that I kind of felt like I had no other option. So I decided to fix it. And that was opening up my own shop.
That is not the answer I always hear, but I will say that is definitively how I started doing what I'm doing with Brawl and AIM. Is I was, to your point, bitching about this whole system for many years. And literally I had somebody say to me at some point, like, listen, Anthony, like every time I talk to you, you're talking about how the lenders are doing this to brokers and brokers are not getting this. And you're always complaining about it. Like, you know, why don't you just either do something about it or stop talking about it. And it was the first time I had something like that, like epiphany, like, you know what? I can do something. Like, why don't I go attack this? And same thing with you is you made the decision. I want a predictable experience for my customers. I want a predictable experience for my real estate agents, my referral partners. And if I can't control that here, then I'll go make it happen on my own. Now, when you had that epiphany, that sort of, you know, hey, listen, this is what I'm going to do. What was the process for you to, whether it's, you know, reaching out to friends, reaching out to brokers, reaching out to like, how did you go through the decision making of like, hey, I'm doing this and let me understand what this actually is?
So I got really lucky. The office that I was at the time, there was a couple that had left and opened up their own shop. So I'm like, and they were big producers as well. So I was kind of like, okay, like, well, if they could do it, maybe I can. So I ended up calling her and she was so kind, surprisingly, you know, and she actually introduced me to Brawl.
Oh, really?
She was like, have you, you know, joined this group? And I'm like, who are they? And so this is before I decided to become a broker. And so I go in there and I join the group and I'm like, this is exactly what I've been looking for. Because I had no direction. Like, what do I do? Who do I call? Is there like a checklist or some, you know, training?
Yeah. And what's the process?
Exactly. And of course, it's still in the process of coming into existence. But just to know that there were other people that were going through what I was going through at the time made it feel like more possible and not as scary.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you joined the Brawl group, which is now we call it Brokers Are Better. It's a Facebook group. We have, you know, about 4,000 brokers that are in the group. And what I look at the group as more than anything is it's essentially the crowdsourcing of, you know, getting answers quick. So like for me, like when I owned my mortgage brokerage, if somebody had a question that I couldn't answer, it was, you know, hey, let me email my AEs. Let me email like all these random people to try to get it. In that group, you put a question out there. Somebody's dealt with that scenario. Somebody's dealt with that issue that week. And they're going to be able to tell you, hey, this is the best way to go, or this is the best lender to work with on that loan, or whatever the situation is. So it's become when I started, I didn't know the power of social media. Now that that group has been what it is, where like between now and between the time we start this podcast and the time I get back to my computer, there will be 20 posts. There will be, you know, 40 to 50 comments on each post. And for me, you know, a lot of what that represents is people going out of their way to help other people with nothing in return. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to spend time educating somebody on a subject that you're not going to get anything back. And like the other day, somebody posted about technology and they had a question. They said, hey, you know, does anybody use this? Can you help me with it? I looked at it and there was 5 comments from people saying, hey, here's my number. Call me anytime. You know, we can hop on a screen share. And for me, it's just, you know, it really is eye opening because it tells me that there's a lot of good people out there. There's just a lot of people that are willing to give their time. And obviously, you're one of those people as well. So you went through the process. Now you're in the social media group. How did you actually learn, like, hey, I got to start an article of incorporation, or I have to, you know, go on NMLS and set up a business account. Like, how did you actually go through that process?
I kind of cheated. There was this company, and I didn't know this existed, that would actually help me get licensed. And I'm like, what? So it became a little less overwhelming once they started finding the right people.
So tell us about the company, because that's obviously a great tool.
Like I said, I really got fortunate. I had seen this other big team leave, and, you know, she was just so open about what they had gone through and the experience they had. And she was very forthcoming, and she was like, you know, join this group. And I think that the someone at the time, I'd gone to a previous training at UWM, and I'd heard about the fact that UWM would actually help, you know, kind of put you in the right direction. Not so much that they would open the brokerage for you, but they would help put you in the contact with the right people. And so I ended up reaching out to UWM, and sure enough, there is like this whole list of information that's available, and they put it there. Like, you know, if you need a credit reporting company, here you go. Here's a list. If you need help with licensing, here's a list.
Contract processor.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
It's a great resource. It really is.
Oh, so fantastic. So that was actually what made it more real.
Yep.
You know, having access to the information that I needed, it was just fantastic.
So, and that team is, it is a tremendous tool. And I've had an opportunity, obviously, because of the number of brokers that come to us about becoming a broker, or the number of loan officers that come to us about becoming a broker, we refer people to that team. So Vince Parlov, Jamie Brasco, Christina Bennett, their whole job essentially is to any broker, depending upon what state you're in, they kind of give you like a roadmap of, hey, step one, here's a list of attorneys that you can get your corporation set up with. Step two, you got to go on MLS and set up your profile. Like they give you that whole roadmap. So it's not so unstructured and just going on the MLS website and kind of getting like this, you know, very government issued, you know, guidance. So they're extremely helpful. And I will say all the people that we've referred to them have been happy with how the processes went. Now, as you went through that process, you're still obviously a loan officer because, you know, you have to, you know, feed your family. you're getting your filings in order. You're getting your surety bond. You're getting all the requirements done. Once the brokerage is, you know, first of all those steps, how complicated, how difficult was it on you? Just go through those steps.
It literally was a phone call. So once I got the list, it made it more, like I said, more realistic. So I literally was just calling down the list and people would direct me. Oh, you got to do this first. Okay. I would go do it and come back. Can I do it now? Yep. Now let's move on to the next step. So that portion of it was, like I said, surprisingly not as complex as I thought it was going to be, because I was very intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like hire a lawyer to defend me, because I'm probably going to end up in court or jail for filling out the paperwork incorrectly. So, you know, you have such an anxiety because it is, you know, of course, you know, legal documentation, but you want to do it right.
Yep.
So, but having the right people to help you. Oh my God.
That
just made it so much easier. And it allowed me to continue to produce.
Yep.
So,
so it wasn't a big distraction where you couldn't do your day to day.
No.
God.
No, not at all.
What about, so you get the approval done, you know, obviously as you go through that process, how long do you think it took you to start to finish from the time you kind of started?
So I was anticipating it was going to take like 4 months when I began. I literally think it might have been 30 days.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, so, super fast. You know, I got my license and he was like, you're approved to do what? Like, you can start actually, you
originating,
know, originating through your own company now. I can. So actually, it took me a while. Like, I got approved way faster than I thought. I had not let my... the owner of the company I was with know that I was leaving.
You thought you had more time.
I had more time. So that was a little awkward. But he was very kind. You know, he kind of knew that this was probably coming because I kept bitching and complaining.
Yeah.
You know, he was not too surprised. But once I'd pulled off the Band-Aid, you know, he wanted me to stay. And I was like, I can't now.
Yeah. Because once, like, I think, you know, it's one thing if you have that conversation before you get into the process. And I think things can be salvageable. But once it's real and like you look at, you know, oh my goodness, my license is approved, I can start originating loans on your own. Like, I remember when I started my own brokerage in 2011. And, you know, I'm in this small closet office. It was just me by myself originally. And I'm sitting there, I'm just like, oh my goodness, like I'm taking an application. I'm about to register with the lender. At the time we were working with Provident and, you know, Hudson City Savings Bank, but it wasn't real until like, oh my goodness, like, well, let me just fund it. Like they're sending me a check. I'm not like I never saw a check when I was a work for somebody because, you know, the checks always went to the, you know, the accounting or the broker owner. So like the first time you get a check, it's like, this is actually like, I'm in control of putting this in my bank account. It's a very eye-opening like experience. And obviously it took a little while to get used to, but once you've had that, it's very hard to go back. It's like, you know, it's very hard to kind of like not be the owner. So for you, now that you went through the process, you're approved, you're officially transitioning out of the company you work for, you're now on your own. What is the, you know, first 90 days, first 120 days, what does that look like? What are the obstacles? What are the things that you would say, you know, hey, this took longer than expected. This was harder than expected, or, you know, maybe it wasn't.
Oh, it was scary. Just like I said, coming out of a company that did everything for me, deposited the, you know, commission checks, cut my payroll, hired the processors, all of this stuff.
Compliance, getting your files in order.
Exactly. Once I closed a deal, I was done.
Out.
Thank you for the check. but now I can't do that. You know, you see it from the beginning past the end.
It's not over. It's never over, actually, because you're on the hook from a compliance perspective for 4 years. So
there you go.
The entire process looks very different. Like to me, it's like when I was an originator, it was just like, okay, loan closed. Okay, I can put this on my commission sheet for payroll next week and then I'm done.
Yeah.
But for you as the business owner, you're now sitting there saying it's got to be stacked. Did we get everything? Did we, you know, did we document change of circumstances? Like it can be intimidating. It can be a lot more. So even though there's an upside financially, there's also a lot of responsibility.
Yes. So I think that because it's literally I'm in my 90 days now. what I wish I would have done was got the checklist for the compliance part in place first.
Yep.
Because I find myself going back, double checking because the check. List wasn't in place in the beginning.
Yep.
Making sure.
People don't think of that up front until it's like, oh, wait, I have to do this. Like, I see that all the time.
Yeah.
So what does that checklist look like from your perspective? It's the file retention's obviously one part of it.
Yeah.
But as you kind of go through your process, like, how is the process differently now, viewing it from a broker owner's eyes versus originator? Like, how you do, like, every step of the way?
I pay attention. Before I wasn't, you know, before it was like, you know, I took the application, ran the credit, got my approved eligible, contract comes in, it's out of my hands.
Yep.
Right? The processor closes it from there if she's good. and then I'm on to the next deal.
Yep.
Whereas now I've got to make sure that people are entering the information correctly, that they are double checking the paperwork. Once we were closing, we got to go back and make sure that everything that was changed at any time during the process of the transaction has been documented. Whereas before, like I said, it really was, I didn't realize how spoiled I was until I got on the other side. So yeah, it definitely is. It's been a really amazing experience, but there was a lack of understanding on the compliance part. Like that is something that I don't think we talk about enough.
Yeah.
And I've kind of figured it out because I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to do it the right way. So I'm constantly asking questions. And I've been very fortunate that people are willing to help and give me the information that I need. So, yeah, compliance is huge. I wish I would have known how important it was when we first started so that I wasn't going back and doing so much double work now.
Yeah, I agree. So at Garden State Home Loans, you know, when we started the company, I'm sort of one of those people where I always think the worst. So like I'm an optimistic person in my life, but like when it comes to anything I do, I really, really think of the worst. So like with compliance, we were over the top. We were one of those companies where it was like originally we were disclosing from our brokerage and then doing the lender disclosures, which now we evolved to only just do the lender disclosures because that's all you have to do. But we were just so over the top with it because I was always had this fear of like, I didn't know what the compliance was. I didn't know what was going to happen when an auditor came in my office. So having gone through that multiple times, I learned about what really matters. And, you know, for the regulators, and I'm not a compliance expert, but I'm just going to talk about my experiences. The regulators were always, you know, listen, they are not there to put good people and mm-hmm. small businesses out of business. Like, that's not what their role is. They're given a rep of being like this intimidating, like, you know, hey, we're going to go crack down on you. But if your customers are happy and that's reflective in your reviews and they're not getting any complaints at the state level, they're not coming in to hurt you. So, but what they do is they want to educate you. So like the first audit from each state that we were licensed in, what they would do is they would come in and basically they would identify all the things we were doing wrong. And they wouldn't say, you were sitting there like sweating profusely, armpit sweat, you know, like just like, oh my goodness, we're going down. Like, oh,
we're going to go to jail.
I'm going back to the pizzeria. Like it's over. But the reason why they're showing you these things is the next time they come, they say, you know, hey, listen, we're not going to hit you now. You know, but you have to retain this document. You have to do this document. They were never big things. It was just accumulation of little small things. And their whole thing is, I'll be back in 2 years. And when we come back, we're going to have this report that we identified these things and we expect you to correct them. And when they do come back, you have corrected them. Now, it's funny because the things that they look at that we're going to focus on and aim as far as from a compliance education standpoint are the things that a lot of broker owners aren't necessarily thinking of when they think of compliance. They think of, you know, file retention, and they think of like, you know, the basic LO comp and those types of procedures. But it's things like social media. You know, for example, the last audit we went through, the auditor came in and, you know, was on social media, took screenshots of my Facebook profile, took screenshots of my partner's Facebook profile. And he's like, hey, you know, I see you here. You got the Garden State home loans, but there's no NMLS number. You gotta have an NMLS number. Like things that you do on a day-to-day basis, like promoting your company, promoting your brand, that like you don't have that social media compliance part of it down. So those are the areas that we're gonna focus on trying to educate brokers on. But it's a lot, you know, it is something that you can't go open a brokerage and think, I'm just going to do what I did as a salesperson at a company and nothing's going to change. Like, it's a big burden. Yeah. So for you, what has been the most difficult thing to do as you've gone through this 90-day process as far as, you know, whether it's policies, procedures, signing up with lenders, what's clunky?
I think that the growth came so quickly. I was already doing a lot of business. And so when I transitioned over to the brokerage side, it gave me a lot more. I had more products to leverage. So it was kind of easy to say, hey, I can do this now and I can do that now. Whereas before I couldn't. And it just was like, you know, I'm like, oh, my God. And so I started kind of like I did what I'm not supposed to do. I started hiring out of desperation because I felt so overwhelmed. That, you know, just really just being underprepared is where I kind of find myself struggling at the moment. Like, I was not ready for everything that's happened, not realizing how important my checklist for my compliance was. Talking about the social media now, I'm going to go back and check my social media. So just things that you're kind of not really thinking about, because you're great at bringing in business. You're very talented at that part. So it kind of sometimes makes it really easy. But then you're like, oh my God, now I got all this business. What am I going to do? And like I said, you're just desperate to close the loans because you've been saying that this is what you do, right? Now, yep. You know, I've got more access, I can close your deals, and people are trusting you with their livelihood.
And you're trying to deliver that predictable experience for your customers and dealers. So you still have that pressure that...
Oh, my God. So that was... That's been the hardest thing for me is growing... Continuing to try to, like, keep my systems the way they have been, but putting new people into it.
Yep. So how many, it's you, and how many people are with your brokerage?
So it's just me. I'm the only LO. I have a loan partner. I just hired a processor about a month ago or so, might be going on two. And then I'm technically training a second loan partner now. So
got it. So I mean, you just started in May. So we're sitting here, it's September. It's only been 4 months. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, realistically speaking, it's you plus essentially almost four people. That is a lot of growth. Like people from the outside looking in, you know, anybody that's gone through this process knows, like, in your first 4 months to actually go through starting a business, bringing on employees, getting them to adopt your policies and procedures and systems, like, it's a lot. Like, delegation when you're so busy at that early stage is very hard, because any minute that you're not spending on originating loans, if you're the number one, if you're the top originator,
then I'm the only originator.
So you need to keep bringing business in, but you're also training too. It can be overwhelming. That can be more overwhelming than the business part of it.
Anthony, I got gray hair now. And I promise this happened in the last 30 days.
it's so true. It really is. But with that said, you know, you have good problems, which is you have too much business. You're in a situation where, because you have the optionality of products, you can take on more loans. How are you dealing with the balance part of it? Because I do think that's another area that can be trouble. It can be, you know, difficulty.
I love what I do. I love the mortgage business. I have self-control issues with it. Like, I will work on the weekend. But it's not because I feel like I have to. It's really weird. So I don't know. Like, I kind of have come to just accept that I really love the mortgage business. Yeah. And because I do, like, people are like, you're so weird. Why are you reading guidelines? I don't know. Like, I want to know, is there a loophole to this? Is there another way I can do it? Other people have said, no, can I do it this way instead? You know? So, luckily, it's just me. I have a 17-year-old son, so he's got his own life. But we still do things together, you know? So I don't know. I will work from
start to finish.
Start to finish and not feel bad about it.
I will tell you that when people tell me, you know, they're anything negative about, you know, hey, I'm, you know, I don't want to work past five, or I don't want to do this, I don't do that, I realize that there's certain people that look at work in the light of it being a job.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of what you're describing is sort of the way I look at work, which is like, you know, it's not work. It's like kind of just like, this is, I'm doing what I want to do. It just so happens that I get paid for it.
Yes.
So for you, what part of that do you enjoy the most? You know, I always personally enjoy the people part of it, like the customer interaction. At our company, the way it worked is essentially, anytime there was a customer complaint, it was an immediate Anthony, it gets transferred to Anthony. And at the time, I really, you know, it was hard. It was because we dealt with customers that could be really high touch and they would beat you up. But turning somebody from a bad experience to a good experience was always something we really took pride on. It was like, how do we get this person that currently, if they were going to do a review, they give us 1 star. How do we get to a 5? So for me, it was the people part of it. I really enjoyed the customer experience and to a degree, even the realtors contribute, you know, part of it too. What's your part of it that you enjoy the most?
Because of the I guess the branding that we've built out, the We Save Loans, I get a lot of files that have actually been turned down by other lenders. Like, and the most memorable ones have been the moms. Like, I've had literally, it was crazy. So 1 month back to back, I had like the same person come see me, but it wasn't, of course, the same person.
Profile.
Yeah, like the pregnant mother, she's sobbing. The other lender had just turned her down and she was buying her dream home. Like, this is where she was going to raise her kids. And, you know, of course, she feels like someone just took that from her. And I'm just sitting there listening to her story. I'm about to start crying. Right. And I'm holding her hand. And I was like, if not this house, I will get you into a home. I promise. And so she was like, I'm just thankful somebody listened to me. She walks away. We close her deal. Same person literally walks in like a week later from the same builder. And same scenario, for whatever reason, lender turns her down. And I love that part of it. Like, being able to call them and say, congratulations, your loan's been approved. we just need to do the next couple of things and we can get you into your house. And for them to just like,
yeah,
oh my God.
I know that,
that feeling is worth more than all the money in the world.
It really is. Like,
it is. And I think that's the part that I hope mortgage brokers understand, that that's, you know, people want to scale their businesses. People want to grow and become, you know, everything's so quick and they're the biggest. But like for me, I think we're the, you know, the broker's the anti-quick and we're the personalized part of it. So it's like the emotional part of the housing business is the best part of it. So you're, you know, people are getting home ownership. Like think about how like powerful that is for people. Like this is one of their biggest goals of their life. Their family, their kids, like this is like all those emotional thoughts and you get to participate. You're the delivery mechanism. So like the realtor is the, you know, to a degree, the door opener that's showing them the house they're falling in love with. But biggest fear that every consumer or home buyer has is them not getting the money.
Yeah.
And that's our job. So like mm-hmm. being able to deliver, that's really powerful. Especially for somebody that's been declined. Like I actually was before, just in preparation for this, I searched in our Brokers Are Better group, Isabel Williams, and I looked up all your posts and I was like going back and I see Angel Oak and I see some of the lenders that obviously, you know, you do non-QM, you do some of those things. And I, you know, a lot, I'll have brokers come to me and say, hey, you know, I'll steer clear of these lenders or these loans because they're difficult. And at Garden State, we had the same thing. We would not do anything that had hair on it. But my view on that has completely changed, which is how can you not serve all your customers? So anybody that wants to do business with you, if there is a loan out there that, you know, is, you know, good for them, and it's not like, you know, obviously back in the day, the predatory stuff, then why wouldn't you deliver that for them? And I think like that's a big part of this business and being an expert is like, learning those programs, like you said, learning your guidelines, learning those programs. If somebody comes to you, it's like, oh, it doesn't fit in my Fannie box. It's not a loan I'm going to do. No, there's other lenders.
There's other lenders.
So I see that you do a lot of that. And, you know, I do see from a standpoint of educating other brokers, you spend a lot of time putting that out there. What is your, you know, as you look forward a year from now, let's stay within 12 months. What are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? You know, do you add people to your team? I know you don't have any other loan officers. Is that something that you might add on?
What's interesting is I think that if you're passionate about what you do, people just come out of the woodworks looking for you. Like I've actually had two loan officers like, hey, I want to come work with you. Okay. So it's almost like a forced growth. I'm looking forward to it because I am, I love seeing other people do well. I grew up in a small town where, you know, being successful was managing the Burger King, right? Like seriously, like it was nothing but cow pastures and orange fields. My parents were, migrant workers. You know, we moved around a lot when I was little, and just kind of coming from that experience and knowing that I am where I am right now because of other people that I've met that have fed into me, right? They've given me the best. I want to give that back. And so I guess that's kind of what drives what I do, you know, and I see why I enjoy the mortgage business so much. Because like I said, it's you're constantly helping people and we just happen to get paid to do it. So what an amazing job. What an amazing privilege.
Yeah, it is. And the funny thing is when I ask people how they got into the mortgage business and I look at how I got in the mortgage business, it's always the same thing. It's, you know, they fell into it, a friend of a friend, somebody just happened to get them into it. And I do think that, you know, as far as our, you know, what our goals are here at AIM, it is one of the goals of trying to bring, you know, people into the system that are, you know, coming out of college or in a profession that isn't as rewarding. So I have the same kind of, you know, outlook on it, which is there's a lot of people out there that work really, really hard at their jobs and they don't make a good living and they don't get the fulfillment that we get on a daily basis as mortgage brokers and loan originators. So I do think that's important. I think that's an area that, you know, there should be more focus at the business owner level. It's like, how do I get new talent in the door that doesn't understand? Like you can make six figures in this business almost immediately if you have the work ethic and are willing to learn. So for you, obviously you're 4 months into your brokerage, you're obviously having success and growing. Are you more focused now on, you know, getting the improving the systems, putting the compliance policies in, or are you still at the point where you're focused on, you know, essentially getting more loans at the door?
No. It's crazy. Like, if you're listening and paying attention, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, talks to you. And I have literally in the last 30 days heard systems. And I'm like, okay, develop your systems. Implement your systems, train people on your systems. So you're constantly wanting to improve on the system itself. And I think that if you're not doing that, you can't grow. And if you do grow, it won't be.
You're gonna have to work really hard.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be very painful. So it's only been a few months in and I'm working on the systems. I actually, before I got here, started writing out like everything that I do, everything that goes into the actual process of the loan and how can we make this a consistent experience every single time. So that was my goal coming into it. And that is literally the thing that I'm chasing, is perfecting the systems, making them trainable. You know, like, I do things a certain kind of way. I like things being done a certain kind of way. But if I'm not teaching people how to do them, they're not going to get it. And it's unfair of me to expect them to rise to my expectation when it's not written out and it's never been addressed.
Yeah, you know? We learned that with Arrive. Honestly, you know, it was a big eye opening experience. But as surprised as I was initially, I'm more surprised that I didn't anticipate the adoption support that's needed. And it's like, you know, hey, if you give somebody a new tool and it's massively different than the tool that they're currently using, you can't just expect without any type of guidance that they're just going to use it and it's going to work. You have to understand that, you know, people need to be, you know, shown how to use things. People have to understand, you know, what is the best way to use this. And if you just assume that just because I put a system in place that it's going to work and people are going to use it, it doesn't work like that. You have to kind of, like, you know, for me, when you talk about the systems that you're talking about, I would always have to show my loan officers, you know, hey, the reason why we do this is because when the loan gets to the pre-underwriter or the processor, they're now in a situation where they're able to submit the loan within 24 hours. They're able, that's one less thing that they have to request, or from getting a CD out, you know, having the homeowner's insurance agent's information is important because that's one of the pieces of information that gets it to 100% for a CD go out. So, like, I would always have to encourage them to understand, like, here is the why behind it, but here's what happens if it doesn't happen. Like, here's the negative part that can happen later. So for you, now that you've been brokering, you're working with a series of lenders, what is that relationship like? Because I think one of the things I hear from a lot of retail loan originators that are considering the process is this fear that, you know, hey, I have underwriters that are dedicated to me. I control the process. I, you know, like that whole control element, just like you kind of described, they think that becoming a broker, they're going to lose all control. So how has that been for you?
It's true. So, you know, when you are plugged into a system that's been running for a while, they've kind of worked out the kinks.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I had a dedicated underwriter, but, you know, I knew the system, right? And I knew what to expect. Coming out of that, oh, yeah, it definitely is sometimes too much freedom.
Yeah.
You know, you set the criteria, you set the systems. And if you're not ready to do that, it can be absolutely overwhelming and probably even detrimental to your business.
Yep. Because you could take on things that you might not necessarily, you shouldn't have taken on.
Yes. So you got to be careful not to say yes to everything unless you're sure, or setting realistic expectations.
I think that's the biggest.
Oh, yeah. That was very painful. Like, the first month that I started on my own, I was telling everybody, yes.
I'll take it on. Bank statement program, no problem. 203K.
Yeah, I got it. You know, and what ended up happening was they closed, but they were the most painful closings I'd ever had because I had people calling, upset. And it was because I had not set the expectations up front. I wasn't being realistic even with myself, right? So yes, sometimes the too much freedom can be a little detrimental if we're not careful, because you're setting the rules.
Yeah, I think that is literally the perfect way of describing it. And we went through the same learning lessons. And I think the way we learned the pain is that we would take something on. And yeah, even though we were very confident in our abilities, if we weren't experts at a non-QM loan or 203K loan, and we didn't know that experience that we were going to have with that lender, and the things that are variables that you don't control, like, you know, on a, you know, the HUD inspector on renovation loans, they could, you know, take weeks. So from an expectation standpoint, it's really understanding, like, hey, Mr. Realtor, you referred me your customers, and the ones that are conventional that fit in this box and I'm going to take to UWM, they're going to close in 21 days. No issues. It's going to be a great experience. But understanding it's not, you know, just because you have these other lenders, a lot of brokers will do one 203K a year or one non-QM loan a year. And if you only do one a year, the likelihood that you're an expert at that lender's processes or like what to expect from their underwriters, it's not going to be there. So I think your advice to people saying, hey, listen, either say no,
yes,
be self-aware, or more than anything, make sure you set really conservative expectations. Give yourself a break and give the customer the expectation of, hey, this might take 2 months. Because you're right, you're going to come across that, you know, mother or that person that's buying a home that's very emotional, and they, you know, they think you're stringing along. They think, you know, it's not going to close, and they're going to beat you up. They're going to emotionally wear you down. So if you tell them up front, hey, this is 2 months and you close in 6 weeks, then they're happy.
Exactly.
But going back to that question, as far as the lenders, like, how are they to work with? How supportive are they? How responsive are they when you have questions, concerns, issues that come up through the process?
I've been very fortunate that the account reps that have been assigned to me are just absolutely amazing. Like, you know, I can call, they'll answer. If I email, they respond. But that isn't with everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I think that as you kind of grow and you try out new systems, you have to make sure that the people you're working with have been there for a while, or that they've got experience, or they can at least get in touch with someone that can get you the answers that you need. I did try out a lender, and they had just hired the account executive. That was where the learning lesson came from. And he wasn't familiar with the system.
Yeah.
So he was no help. You know, luckily, you know, he had a manager that was able to guide me through what I needed to have done. But that was like, ouch, you know, but everybody is trying.
Yeah.
You know, I've been fortunate. I've been very aware, especially joining the Brokers Are Better group in the beginning, of who's in the business to support my business.
Yeah.
So if they're not supporting this movement, I don't work with them.
Yeah.
I've got too many options.
Yeah. And I think that's actually really important, because the bigger part of what we're trying to accomplish with the lenders that are, you know, we're partnering with is understanding that my goal is for a broker to have the same user client experience that a retail lender has. A retail lender that has an underwriter in their office, a closer in their office, people that are at their disposal and delivering that seamless experience. So for me, the education to the lenders has been talking to them a lot about what is the role of the account executive, and understanding that, you know, if you view your account executive as a salesperson, but not as an educator or a support person, then you have to evolve, because, you know, once the sale is made and the relationship's been developed and you sign your broker package, now it's time to do business. And that's the, you know, from my perspective, a good account executive is somebody that you don't necessarily speak to every day. You don't have to see them every day, but when you need them, meaning, hey, my CD hasn't gone out, my purchase is closing at 5 o'clock today, what's, you know, I need help. You need them to spring to action. And for me, what the criteria is for a great account executive is, if they are coming, when I ask them a question or I need help, if they're coming back and they are A, educating me how to do it right next time, great. I want to make sure this doesn't happen again, because 99% of it is making sure that I know, so that my next experience is seamless. So if I miss something, if I knew something, I want to know about it. I don't just want you to fix it. But also, fix it because I want to close we have to close our loan for our borrower on time. So I think that's important. I will tell you that the other thing I always tell our lenders is we can't as brokers not deliver. So refinances, they can be delayed. Purchases can't. If somebody's expecting to close on a certain date at a certain time, you have to deliver. So that's one of those things where when last minute things have come up in the past historically, I think that a lot of lenders have always had the approach of reschedule your closing very cut and dry. Now, at least with the lenders that we're working with, it's understanding that no, there is no delaying. You know, we can educate a broker on what went wrong. We have to deliver. So your turn times are nil. It's review it now, help us get this closed now. And I think that's one of the things I have really drilled down with these lenders is being there for the broker so they're not on an island. For you, if you were talking to a loan officer that is in the same situation you were 6 months ago, they think they want to open a broker shop or go work for a broker, what advice would you give them? What, warnings, advice, recommendations would you provide?
I would definitely say that you want to talk to other people that have made the transition, hear directly from the horse's mouth versus just assuming. Because a lot of times we assume that we know things that we have no clue about. Because the right people will give you the right information. The broker that put me in the Brawl group was like, hey, this compliance thing is no joke. Are you sure, this is what you want to do? I'm warning you. I'm like, I think so. And so, like I said, it's really kind of looking at how invested do you want to be? How invested do you want to be? And I think that if I didn't want to be as invested, I probably wouldn't have opened up the brokerage because it does suck up so much of your energy. Yeah. I dream about my business. I wake up early in the morning because, oh my God, I got to go fix this thing. Yep. So if you don't have that level of commitment, I would probably interview a couple of brokers and go work for someone, right? Yeah. That wants to support my growth and give me what I need to take my business, which is my, realtors and clients and all that to the next level. I might go that route, just really depending on how invested I want to be. Because it does take a whole nother level of just energy.
And focus. You can't be, the way I would put it is everything that you do when you're a owner, it's the decision's on you. And decision making is an emotionally tiring thing. So for me, when I think about things hey, we're going to put in this policy on, how we are storing disclosures or, the email template that we send to a borrower to let them know their electronic disclosure might be used. If they get an email from a lender that they don't know, they're just going to ignore it. But you got to send a templated email and say, hey, you're going to be getting this email. Please e-sign your documents. Those are things that you don't just open a broker shop and they're there. You have to create them and you're the creator of them. So for me, I kind of just look at it and, I tell people that are thinking about the transition, I'm not going to give you some rosy picture. I'm not going to set false expectations. This is hard. It's hard to be a business owner. Now, the upside is, being self-employed, wealth creation is really there. Independence and freedom, and you're building something that is it's a real business. I mean, it's something that is going to take on a life of its own eventually. So there's that huge upside. But the reality is the first 2 years are the most difficult because those are the years that you're doing work that nobody ever will see as valuable, meaning the fee templates and the policies and all those things that eventually 2-3 years from now, when you have 10 loan officers or 12 loan officers, everybody's like, oh, this is great. I'm just going along my way and it's in place, but you're the one that's got to create it. So, you do take a step back, the first couple of years you're lucky because your business is booming. But the first couple of years, for me, I definitely had to take a step back financially because it was, spending, I didn't hire a processor way too long, but I think those are the decisions that you really have to think about. And I always tell people, go observe, go to a broker owner, tell them that you have this aspiration, be upfront about it.
Yep.
And say, I want to give this 1 year. I want to give this 6 months. I want to learn from you. And the thing about most broker owners is that, in my experience, is they're not selfish enough to believe like, hey, they are self-aware to say, if I can do this, she can do it, or he can do it. So, they're willing to spend time with you and, make money off you, but at the same time be in a situation where they're sharing with you the pain points that they have.
I call it college.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So for you, is there anything that you would say you miss or, when you were just a LO that you kind of was different?
Than not having to worry. That's really the biggest portion. Like I said, you don't really understand the level of energy that it really takes to make sure that everything's right. So I would say definitely just being able to clock out.
There's no clocking out.
There's no clocking out now. Like I can't be off, because you're constantly monitoring, watching. It's your baby.
Yep.
Right. It's like literally that's what I feel like. Like I'm a parent to a newborn all over again, So like I just kind of think of that, like that, that level of obsession.
Yeah.
Cause that's really what it is. When your baby's born, you're obsessed.
Yep.
Oh, he cried.
Yeah. I got a 10.
Oh, he just fell down and hit himself, So you're constantly just like running after it.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure that it's doing well and it's growing. So just probably the thing that I miss is, people talk about that after they have a child, being able to sleep through the night. That's what it feels like. I miss that part of it sometimes, but I love the beauty of watching
it grow
and develop and become its own thing. And even better than, I guess, what I had dreamt of, because I literally, that's being a mom. That's what I would kind of compare it to. Like,
I think that's a really good comparison. I really do. And I would also say things like customer reviews, the way that, I always looked at those was, even though my company, in your case, we save loans, it's a company. So it's not you, but it really is you. When I look at it, say, when somebody Googles my company, whatever comes up is going to be a direct reflection of the character of me and the kind of person I am. So if it's all 5-star reviews, then people are going to be like, that's what kind of that's the expectation of what you're dealing with as a person. And I think you're thinking about it the same way, which is I'm looking to build, great customer experience. I'm looking to build a great experience for my referral partners. I want my employees to be happy here.
Yes.
But more than anything, I think that you're most focused on, hey, I'm building something that I love to participate in the growth of and seeing it grow every single day. So it's a very special, it's what makes us entrepreneurs.
Yes.
For you, what's next? Where are you? What next 6 months, 12 months? Give us the outline of where is your business growing? How are you growing it? And what does the future look like?
So once I put my systems in place and train everybody up to par, I want to hire on an account rep because I need boots on the ground, right? In my local market, luckily, because I'm so vocal and outgoing, a lot of people know who I am. But I want to extend that reach further south. And it's humanly impossible to be in two places at one time. So I actually kind of want to go the route of hiring, for me, because I'm a little bit of a control freak, licensed loan officer assistants, right, to kind of help with the packaging of the loans, and then having reps on the outside, bringing in the actual business, right, just growing the brand and so on and so forth. So that's kind of the route I want to take it.
I like it. So they're not acting, you're looking at them and saying, hey, your role is not consumer facing. You're going to go in B2B, realtor shops, accountant office, home builders, and you're acting as an account executive, building our brand, getting us out there. And you get, if they refer a loan in, LOA is going to do the packaging and we'll control that on the inside. I mean, I think that's a great model. Yeah. I really do. It was great talking to you. Obviously I've learned a lot about you. I didn't know you were a veteran, Really impressive, to be honest with you. It's an impressive, you know, starting as a real estate agent, becoming a broker or becoming a loan officer, becoming a broker owner, obviously raising your son on your own. It's a very impressive life that you had. So I really appreciate the opportunity to spend with you.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Well, thank you for your time. And to all the AIM members, I hope you were able to get a lot out of this interview. I think that Isabel Williams is a very, very straightforward description of what it takes to be a broker owner, what it takes to be an entrepreneur. So we hope that you got a lot out of this session, and we look forward to talking to you the next time. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Broker.